Welcome back, everybody, to the Brew University Book Club podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Weaver, and we are churning along through Entree Leadership by Dave Ramsey, the first book in our book club series, breaking down each chapter and talking about how you can take away things from these books that apply to us as leaders in the beer business. So I have assembled my regular cast of characters, all leaders in the beer business themselves, to help me do exactly that. And they are with me as always, starting with Dustin Schatz, our delivery director in Tampa. Hi, Dustin.
Hey, how you doing, Jeff?
Good. Glad to have you back with us once again. Also, Chris Morgan, our Fort Myers C&G sales manager. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Jeff.
How's everything in Fort Myers? You ready to rock and roll?
Sunny and beautiful.
All right, the way it should be. Suzanne Borges is with us from Tampa, our HR director. Hi, Suzanne. Good morning, indeed. Dan Endres, all the way from Minnesota. Hi, Dan. How's it going?
Going great, Jeff. Good morning.
Good morning. And last but not least, of course, Lisa Velez, our e-commerce director in Tampa, is with us as well. Hi, Lisa.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. I'm ready to talk about sales. Are you guys ready to talk about sales?
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic, because that's what this chapter is all about. We are on Chapter 8 of Entree Leadership, called Death of a Salesman. And so today we will talk about how sales and a selling culture is important to your organization, something that is certainly important to our organization as we definitely have a selling culture. So right off the top, I'll open it up and say, what'd you guys think of Chapter 8, The Art of Selling by Serving?
Well, for me so far in the whole book, this was one of my favorite chapters because this is what I do daily. So this was right up my wheelhouse. This involved literally everything I do. So I really enjoyed this one.
Yeah, I love the whole concept of selling by serving, you know, because again, J.J. Taylor fully believes in the whole right beer for the right account at the right price. And, you know, you really want to make sure that you're looking out for the best for your customers. And, you know, we provide a service to them by making sure that we get the right thing to them at the right price at the right time. So, yeah, I mean, I loved this chapter. I really did.
And to take that first choice one step further, not only are we being first choice for our customers, but in turn, we're being first choice for our employees and our own company and also the suppliers that we have a receivable to give back to them as well. So it's a full circle first choice service model.
Yeah, bringing it on back to our trusted beer advisor. It's not just the sales guy out there putting every tap on every account. I mean, I think, you know, it's always good to see the things that we're doing that, you know, make sense. And this piece really came out to me with regard to our salespeople.
Yeah, I think fundamentally where Ramsey's philosophy on this is certainly right aligned with the way we approach things, right? It's more than just getting the sale. It's more than just closing the deal. It's certainly not chasing the MBO or chasing the incentive of the month. It's all about the long-term relationship. You know, when we teach selling the first choice way, our sales 101 course, we talk about in that how we are a farming sales organization, not a hunter-gatherer sales organization. That, in, you know, some people in sales are that hunter type, go out, kill it, bring it home, and then go find something new. But that's not what we do. What we do is really more of a farming approach. We go out, we build a relationship, we cultivate that crop, and then we got to go back every week and cultivate over and over again. So, you know, we have to keep an almost higher level of service in mind, because you can't make a bad sales call in chase of an incentive and then have to go back in that account 2 weeks later when it's not working and face the owner and explain that, well, I was more interested in the MBO than I was in what was right for your account. That's not going to be how you win in our accounts over time. So the service mentality that he provides, I think, works for any organization, but is particularly important in ours, where relationships are at the absolute core of how we sell. So let's talk into, you know, some of that philosophy and some of the stuff he talks about of, you know, selling is sort of built into the DNA of his team and certainly in ours. What did you guys sort of key in on there?
Well, I just loved how he talked about, you know, building that rapport. You know, anytime I bring on a new sales rep, I always make sure that the first thing they do is just concentrate on building rapport with their accounts. I always tell them, don't worry about the MBO right off the bat. I want you to build rapport, because you can't just walk into an account and go, hey, I've got these items and my name is Joe. You know, I said, go build a rapport with your accounts. I said, go to them. If you have to take a little notebook and learn how many kids they have, learn if their kids play sports, you know, find some common ground with them. I think that that trust factor, and like Suzanne said, being a trusted beer advisor is, you know, is key to what we do. You know, we look at our competitors and say, oh, those guys are sales reps, but we're not sales reps. We're trusted beer advisors. And I really believe that. And I always want my team members to believe that, that we're not a salesperson. We're not just going out to sell you something. We're going out and you trust in my advice. You believe in what I believe in. And if it doesn't work, you believe that I can help you make it right. So
yeah, there is definitely that power of language, right? You talked about, we call them team members, not employees, because it connotates something different. We call our people trusted beer advisors, not just a sales rep, because it has a higher degree of difficulty, but a higher degree of expectation that comes with it.
And Chris, you're exactly right. I like that you jumped off at point two. Dave's process is a four-step selling process. We have the luxury of assuming that everybody that we interact with is qualified for the most part because they're in the industry. That said, rapport is absolutely key. You cannot get anybody to buy in and be or to think of you as a trusted beer advisor if you don't have that rapport with them first.
And I did skip qualifying because, like you said, I'm assuming. But then, you know, they're not always qualified. There could be, you know, a hot craft brand and you're like, yeah, you're not getting this because you just don't have that clientele or you're not in that. Yeah. So
that goes back to what we were talking about last week with the Spanish Bodega account that wanted to buy, you know, 40, 50 cases of President Day, 40, 50 cases of Heineken. He wasn't going to be the right account to send all that bulk beer in there. Mm-hmm. And you have to kind of qualify him and explain it to him. Hey, listen, you know, back up a little bit now. Let's buy a smaller purchase. Let's make sure that we can sell what we have. And that kind of also helps to build rapport because now he trusts me. I mean, it's not a matter of I could have gotten him to, you know, purchase all these extra amounts of cases and it would have made me look great that day. However, those are, you know, that's not what we're here to do. You know, I want to make sure that the beer is moving and fluid and something, it's something that he can handle, you know? So yeah, it all kind of ties in together, not just qualifying them, but also building them, building the rapport with them and going forward with that.
You would be surprised how many accounts call me to complain that a guy won't send them the amount of beer that they want.
Yep.
And you look at the account's history and you have to explain that to them. You say, well, you know, you want 30 of those. Well, you sold two since the beginning of the year. And I always explain to him, my guy's on commission and he's telling you no because he doesn't want to do that to you. You should respect that. Right. He's trying to do the right thing for you. So, yeah, qualifying is huge. Huge part of what we do.
Yeah, I think that's a different kind of qualified. I mean, obviously they're all licensed, they're all capable, they're store owners, but it is interesting to consider that angle of, are they the right account for this type of product? Are they getting at the right levels? You know, obviously because we sell in quantity discount, there are some accounts that, oh, they really want to hit that price point. And they don't understand that you're going to hit that price point, but your backroom is going to be a disaster. You're not going to pull through for months on end. And if 10 of those 30 cases go out of date because you couldn't sell them in 9 months, you're going to have lost the margin that you went for in the first place. And so it's a different type of qualification, which I hadn't really thought much about before, but you guys are making good points about qualifying and what it means for us, even in that business where we know they're a viable account. We go every week. We know that they're going to order beer, but you know, thinking of it at that micro level of the sales, an interesting approach. What else stuck out to you on this chapter about selling?
Definitely education and information. You know, our reps have to be, we have to be able to sell and to have product knowledge, you know, whether it's, you know, availability on seasons, whether it's SKUs, whether it's pricing, whether it's, you know, what our competition is selling, all of that kind of really ties in. It helps build credibility for ourselves, you know, as a company and as our team members, you know. But yeah, definitely really important to be educated and have the information that we need to get the job done.
Hard to be an advisor if you're not seen as an expert. And I think that's where that education piece comes in, is that we have to be in the position to feel like when people ask us a question, we have the answer or can get the answer or that we have the expertise. Because how am I going to take your advice if I think I know more than you? So being educated on, again, what's in season, what's available, that's important. I think, to your point, Lisa, even more important is being informed on what's the market doing? What are the trends? Where are the products going? Why is this new product that's coming out important, and where does it fit in the overall portfolio? Having that kind of education and knowledge, I think, is big for our people, because it definitely applies to how they are seen as an advisor or not. One thing that I thought was interesting is that, you know, he really did talk about how everyone is in a sales mentality in their organization, that every interaction with customers is an opportunity for sales, and that there's an underlying thought there that culture is what you're selling. You're selling the brand. It's not just the products. That's an aspect of selling. That's the direct sales. But the talk that he has in this chapter about how even the customer service reps, even the people in the call center, when people are calling, that is still a selling opportunity because we're selling them on the brand itself as being the first choice. And when we think about us and our first choice mentality, I think that having that every interaction is an opportunity to sell, maybe not a specific product or something goes in the door, but selling the brand, selling the company as the first choice provider is really key. And I'm guessing, Dustin, that sort of applies to where your team's mentality is, particularly on the you know, the delivery side of things, because they're not moving a product in per se, but they're definitely a big part of keeping us sold as the first choice distributor.
Yeah, no, I would definitely agree. And I was thinking about, as far as, just because I'm not in sales either, but when I'm dealing with employees and building team and trying to move people from one particular role to another, it's all about kind of selling them on it, you know, and just being informed and answering all the questions. But yeah, like you say, the same thing when the driver's in an account, just making sure that he's doing, you know, everything he can to make that customer happy, kind of, you know, closing the deal, closing the sale, leaving the door open for future business, more or less.
Pachi always used to point out that the reality hits when the check gets written, and that's where our drivers come in. It's, you know, everything sounds good on the menu when we're selling it in the day before, but when they show up with the beer and request the check, that's almost a second sale sometimes to go, yeah, no, you really do want me to take all this in and give me a piece of paper in return. Do not make me put this back on the truck, can be its own sale at times. And so, again, I like that he has this mentality that he instills in everybody in the culture that we're all in sales. It might not be about order taking. We're all in sales. We're all selling something. And that even translates through, I think, to, you know, in the HR world and in the staffing and hiring world, which we talked a lot about staffing and hiring last week. Staffing and hiring is a sale. We're selling ourselves as a company to our new hires. Right, Suzanne?
That's true. And just even, I mean, from an HR standpoint, from a front desk standpoint, you know, our customers are calling into us. So we have our internal customers, but we deal with those external customers too. If there's issues in the accounts, they will call into HR to talk about those too. So I think all employees from the warehouse, delivery, sales, draft line cleaners, everybody who touches that account is having to sell to that account.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Everything can be thought of in some respect as a sales interaction where we're having to re-earn it every time. And I like that mentality because I think it keeps us a little hungry and it keeps us a little driven to say that every interaction with an account or a retailer is an opportunity to resell them on, we are your first choice. So are we taking advantage of every interaction to that end? Talk to me a little bit about closing. He mentions closing, and I think his take on closing is a little different than most people would imagine it. So what did you guys take away as you read through his thoughts on how to close the sale?
This was actually my favorite part of this chapter. I like how it wasn't about just closing the sale. It was how you closed it. You didn't use manipulation to do it. You know, you were doing the right thing. That way, you know, you do have future sales. If you do use manipulation, you know, they're happy for that minute, but then next week, the week after, you know, they're going to come back, and we're in the business of continued business. So that's definitely not the way we like to do business.
And it also made me think of, we all get sold to all the time, and it made me think of the different ways people close. You know, I had an interaction yesterday where somebody was trying to sell an HR product, and thinking about, you know, they closed me on it because they gave me a deadline that I'm going to reach back out to you. So it just made me think of the sales interactions that you go through throughout the day with other people.
Yeah, and the different styles, you know, of closing, you know, going back to what Dustin was talking about, you know, a lot of our competitors use the, if you don't buy this, I'm going to get in trouble type of thing, or you don't buy this, they're going to fire me, where I make sure that my team members never say anything because, hey, that's not true. We wouldn't do that. But, you know, that's just not building trust and rapport. Again, back to that with your customers. It shouldn't be, you have to get this, or I'm something negative is going to happen to me. It should be, I'm so excited to share this with you, and that's why you're going to take it on. So,
yeah, because otherwise the day comes where they don't want you to be their rep anymore, and they decide, you know what, if all I have to do to get you fired is not buy something, good to know how much power I'm wielding.
Yeah, I kind of like how he says to go, if you go through all four steps of the sales, then the close should actually be seamless. You know, if you go through and you qualify them and you build a rapport and you educate and you inform, then the close should almost be like the next obvious step to make, you know? So yeah, I mean, it's nice to know that if you go through and check all the steps that you need to check, then the close should just be as simple as just like, hey, let's get this in here, you know, on your next delivery, and boom, you know, it's done, you know?
And I like how you don't give a yes or no at the close. You give them an option. Do you want the, yeah, you want the 12 pack or you want the 6 pack?
Exactly.
You want the single, or, you know, do you want the strawberry or the lemonade? Which one are we doing? I mean, you're not giving them that option to say no. And I think going through the steps, once it gets to the close, I think it's pretty obvious once you get to that point if this close is going to happen. I mean, sometimes there's a deadline that has to be, you know, I'll let you know next week, Wednesday or whatever. But a lot of times when it's that moment when our sales guys are there, it's pretty obvious if that close is going to happen. So, you know, and I like how he talked about once that close has happened, let that close happen. Don't keep yakking on about, you know, keep going on and on and on, make the close and then just move on. So,
yeah,
I think it's very important too, that the sales reps have a high, well, in delivery and anybody that interacts with our customers has a high emotional intelligence factor too. Everybody that you sell to is going to be of a different background, of a different personality. So you have to meet them where they are. Your close for account A is going to be different than B and different than C. I love my bartending background and my serving background for that reason. I can almost be a chameleon, that if account A is down to the numbers, I can be down to the numbers. If B is a rapport guy, I can be a rapport guy. You have to fit into any model of any person that you're dealing with. And then to the point you've all made already, the close will naturally happen if you can assimilate to the needs of that consumer.
I always love taking suppliers with me, and we walk into an account and go, all right, this guy is this way. So just be ready. Like, this guy, he's going to cuss a lot. Or this guy is angry. So just don't say this, this, or this. And then this guy, but it's just something that since we do it every day, we know it. But it's fun to, you know, I enjoy going into these guys or these different accounts and having these different personalities, talking to them differently. You know, some of them you don't talk anything about the beer. You just talk about life. And then at the end you go, hey, by the way, we just brought in, you know, Busy 12 packs. I'm going to send you two of them. You're good with that? Yeah, I'm good. All right. And then you move on with your day. And so it's just, it's very interesting. It's fun. It makes this job exciting, and it just makes it so it's different every time.
Chris, I so love that you brought that up, especially with suppliers, because I used to hate it when they would ride with me and they would walk into an account with me. And the first thing they did is sit down in front of this account owner with IRI data says this. Yes. And it's like, they don't want to hear that, you know? And it's like, meanwhile, what I'm doing while they're talking it up, I'm just in the back, just kind of making room, and I've already got a tag, and boom, this is where it's going to go.
Yeah. So,
you know, it's like, you know, I mean, you really have to talk to people where they are, you know? And then it's like, and, oh, please keep your IRI. I tell them, don't bring it. Just talk to them. Just, you know, oh my goodness.
Yeah. Oh, that's happened to me. I couldn't tell you how many times. Or, you know, we'd walk into an account and I would tell them, this person's already going to say yes, just off of, I know them. Trust me, they already said yes. Let's walk in and they've got a wheel full of samples. And I'm like, no, you don't need all that, because they're going to actually try your stuff and they're not going to like it. So just, I'll never forget, it was spring break and there was a new supplier and they brought in this stuff, and the lady called me and she goes, hey, Chris, this person's here. I said, I have, you know, just take a case. And, oh, okay. She called me back. Okay, he hasn't left yet. I told him yes already. And I had to call the guy and go, hey, you want to lose the sale? Get out. She already said yes. Like, she doesn't have time to sit down and listen to IRI data. She doesn't care. She just leaves. So,
Yeah, I remember when there were accounts I'd go on ride with, and the rep would look at you and go, okay, you got to take your tie off for this one. We don't wear ties when we walk into this account because they will throw you out or cut it off and nail it to the bar. You know, one of those two. So you're exactly right. You got to, and that's, again, selling by serving. We meet people where they're at, just like servant leadership that we talk about at the beginning is about leading people the way they need to be led. Service selling is about selling to people the way they want to be sold to. And I really did love that he has that idea that the closing is the natural result of doing everything else right. We spend so much time in sales training teaching people about the close, but in reality, the close should just happen because we got all the other steps right. We qualified them correctly. We had the right rapport. We educated them on this product and we were educating them on the right product for them. The close should just be that natural result. And if we're having to try too hard at the close, it's probably a good indicator that we missed a step somewhere else. If it's not coming through, if they're not saying yes, it's probably not because our closing technique is bad. It's because we didn't do something right. We didn't get the rapport right. We didn't qualify them right. We didn't educate them right. If we had done those things, the close should have probably just been there. What a great little mental check for us as we're trying to sell something to say, if we're not getting the close, back it up several steps and ask, what did we do up the chain that we didn't get exactly right? Good stuff. What else? What else in selling stuck out to you from this chapter?
Well, I can tell you guys also something that we do here, and he talked about it, is knowing your competitor. And so anytime our competition comes out with a brand that possibly could be a hot brand, you know, they drop their seltzers or whatever, we always bring it into our meetings and we try it and we'd have all our people try it so that if account ask, you know, obviously you're praying that it's not the greatest thing you've ever tried. But when an account asks, we tell them, I tried the strawberry, it was the lemon was okay. But, you know, and you, again, being trusted, they're like, oh, well, it's not that great. So if Chris says it's not that great, then it's probably not that great. But vice versa, they've had brands that, you know, I've told accounts, that's really good stuff. You probably want to have that here because I still want you to have as many customers as possible because I know I've got great brands. So, you know, no, you've got to know what your competitors are doing. You've got to know your competitors' brands. You want to know it as much as they know it. So, you know, again, I always harp it back to that rapport, that trust factor. If account asks me about a competitor's brand and I know it, they're going to trust me.
So, Chris, are you saying you're making your team drink Bud Light Seltzer?
We've done it.
Suzanne, you're okay with that, right? I mean, there's no human resource implication in making these guys drink like a Corona Seltzer or something.
We've done it at meetings.
I could have sworn there was an amendment about that, but okay.
To your point, Chris, though, especially with the space management or category management department, I think that's super important to build that rapport and that trust with the retailer. If we're doing a cooler set, it's important to not overlook the other hot categories and the other great brands. We have to make room for them in the cooler to in turn make room for more of our stuff in the cooler. If we don't have that rapport or that trust of the retailer by completely disregarding the competition, we're going to lose ourselves in the long run.
That is something that our competition does all the time. Going back to sets, we'll have an account that'll say, hey, JJ, you present a set, competition, you present a set, and the competition will just, you would think we didn't exist the way they would do it, but we would do it the right way with their stuff in the right positions for them. And you know, if their stuff outsold us over here, but we outsell them over here, we would space that accordingly. And that's, again, goes back to that's why we're trusted. That's why our accounts trust us as their beer advisors, because we do the right thing for them.
Exactly right. And that, again, that speaks to that advisor level expertise. Right. It's if you get asked about, hey, I hear so and so is coming out with this product and you're uneducated on it, that speaks to if you're not even aware, if you've not tried it, it's different to be able to say, yeah, I've tried it, it's not that good, or I've tried it, it's not that bad. But to just straight up be like, I don't know, I don't pay attention to what the competition's doing, that takes us out of that advisor level role. To not recognize the importance of other brands takes us out of that advisor level role. And I think there's a maturity that we achieve as a distributor when we look at this and go, you know, bringing this in is going to grow the category, and overall category growth is going to be good for me too. And so all those points that you guys just made are such key points to being that advisor level position, not just that rep level. You know, I don't just rep these brands. I'm here to advise you on your category. And if the whole category grows, there's going to be growth for me in that. So these are all really important things to keep in mind, and they get back again to that selling mentality of a selling culture of being service selling. Great points. Well, again, I think the most important thing to me was coming off of this, the understanding that everything we do, every interaction is an opportunity to sell the brand, and to understand that having a sales culture and a sales mentality is not just limited to product goes in store, but that it's really about everything we do is selling that first choice reputation that we want to achieve. And that is at the end of the day, our product, our real product is our reputation of being first choice, that we are the place you go to, that we are the trusted beer advisor. If we continue to sell that mentality, we're going to move the products we need to move and get the brands we need to get and achieve the space we want to achieve, because what we're really selling at the end of the day is our most valuable asset, and that's us, our people, right? So that's a great bit of takeaway from this chapter, is to really consider, how does what I do contribute to selling the organization to our customers, to our suppliers? How am I helping make sure that we're selling JJ Taylor as your first choice beer advisor, as your trusted beer advisor? So really great discussion as always, and I appreciate it. Let me thank my participants as we wrap up this chapter 8 of Entree Leadership. Dan, thanks for being here and being a part of it.
Of course, thank you.
Chris, glad to have you here as well for your insights as always.
Thank you.
Lisa, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Dustin, glad to have you.
Thanks, Jeff.
And Suzanne, thanks for being a part of it as always.
Jeff.
My pleasure. And thank you all for listening, and hope you are getting as much out of this as we are. We'll be back again next week to talk about Chapter 9 as we continue our Brew University Book Club exploration of Entree Leadership by Dave Ramsey. See you next time.